The John Daly Show. Sports.
And hi, everyone. Week 13, plenty of great games with lots of implications, but we also have some great storylines and issues. All teams have five games left, and do we really have a good read on the Super Bowl yet? I don't think so. We'll talk about the undefeated Panthers. Can they actually go undefeated? I actually think yes. And the one-loss Pats, why do they resemble a scene from Monty Python? We will put the Pack, Steelers, and Redskins through the grinder we call Pretender and Contender. The USC job was filled from within. What a shock to some NFL coach, but there are still plenty of college jobs left. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about media bias in the NFL. It is there, but you might not see it. And does the media bias tie into the outrageously horrible, this is my bias, referees this season? And what to look for in the upcoming film Concussion, and what the bias might be there, and what to look for with the upcoming decision on L.A. relocation. As always, our expert is Eric Schneider. He is the author of a book on the Raiders and Raider Nation. You can hear him on the Power Hour on 1340 Fox Sports Radio in Las Vegas. Boychuk, good morning. Happy December. Another week that keeps us talking.
Oh, yeah. This is great. This is it. This is the home stretch. Five games left. No more buys. You got parity in the NFL, John. I mean, that's what they like. You got great teams. You got really bad teams. You got teams that are really, realistically, they're 4-7. The Dallas Cowboys are 3-8 and have a chance to win their division.
Isn't that amazing? That is so unbelievable. We'll get into those games in a second. A quick no news update. There is still no decision on fantasy sports from the New York State Supreme Court. The judge is definitely taking his time, which means that both sides have merits here. Any thoughts on that?
Well, the judge told that both sides, being New York when it comes to Las Vegas, and then the representatives of FanDuel and DraftKings, the same thing the judge told the NFL and Tom Brady, try and work this out. You might not like what my decision is. And he's telling both sides, work this out. Well, let's come to some kind of leverage here and get this thing worked out. And I think it will.
Okay, and just folks, just keep watching John Daly Sports on Twitter and Facebook, and if anything breaks, I will pop something up there. All right, let's play Pretender Contender. First, the Green Bay Packers. Pretender or contender?
Well, it depends what happens tonight. They play the Lions in a big game, Thursday night game, national TV. If they win tonight, they're a contender. If they lose tonight, this team was 6-0, and they've just fallen. Not forget the fact that they're 6-0. It's the fact that there's so much talking within the organization about what's going wrong, what's happening here, and too much stuff's leaking into the media about Aaron Rodgers. They're not taking care of business within their own building, so that concerns me.
Okay, Redskins, pretender or contender?
Pretender. I think they're in a bad division. I was shocked. I had the Giants beating them last week, but they came out. Kirk Cousins have a nice season. I still think they're a pretender, so I don't think they're a very good football team, but they're in the midst of a very bad division.
Okay, Patriots, pretender or contender?
Contender.
And the reason I popped that in is because of injuries. You're saying contender, though.
Absolutely. I mean, he's playing with guys off the street. I mean, no team has more starting people injured than the New England Patriots. And that's gone on for a few weeks now. I know, look, Baltimore and San Diego have a lot of guys in injured reserve, but this team just finds a way to win games. They lost a tough one to Denver last week in overtime, but most teams in the NFL wouldn't even been in that game in the fourth quarter with the amount of injuries, if they had the amount of injuries the Patriots have had. They're a contender.
All right. Pretender, contender, Steelers.
You know, this is a team I think that no one wants to play in the playoffs, but I have to call them a pretender because their defense is so bad. Their defense is really bad. If you go back a few weeks when they played the Raiders gave up almost 600 yards of offense to the Steelers, but the Steelers gave up almost 500 yards of offense to the Raiders, and they just couldn't stop Seattle when they had to stop them last week. And Roethlisberger is going to play this week against the Colts, big game. But, again, we talk about this every week. I'm a big defensive guy. And the teams we mentioned that I said were pretenders, the Redskins and now the Steelers, they don't have great defenses. The Patriots do.
I'm with you on that. Okay, injuries are playing a big part again. We saw more players go down last weekend. Do you see any impact at all? I mean, do you see this as affecting any of the games?
Well, yeah, because, you know, if you look at the team that's really the most healthy right now is the Carolina Panthers, and it always goes that way. The teams that are the most healthy going into the playoffs are usually the teams that advance. And you're seeing some nice play out of Brock Osweiler, taking over Peyton Manning. But, again, I've said this to anyone that will listen, John, this is the most injuries I could ever remember at this point of the season. And, yeah, there's guys going down every week, and it's – it's crazy. Now Josh McCown's out with a broken collarbone. You're losing a starting quarterback, it seems, every week the last 6 weeks. It's a little bit concerning.
All right, we're going to get to all the games. But speaking of injuries, Lee, you and I are going to be discussing an upcoming film. Now, you and I have some connections to the film biz in Hollywood, so we catch and watch a lot of flicks closely. I'm going to be watching a lot of political ones based on my Inform, Not Inflame, but I'm also going to be watching this one, Concussion. It comes out around Christmas. You and I are both going to watch it. We're both going to offer reviews here. What are you looking for going into this film?
What I love about it is the fact they're using real players here. You have Luke Wilson playing Roger Goodell. And there's one guy named Dan Strozik, I believe, played for the Steelers. I believe it's one of the integral characters. There's an actor playing him, but he's a guy who went through the concussion. It's really based about the fact that the guy's taking their lives, what do I understand. Will Smith is an integral part of this story, but they use real names. It's not a fictitious story. They use real names in real situations. And from what I understand and from early reviews, it's a great film, but it really puts the NFL in a bad light. And you and I talked about this either last week or the week before, John, about how youth football has really become stagnant with their signups. Mm-hmm. And when this film comes out, if you're a parent, look, youth football was down 28% in signups last season. What's going to happen in the upcoming years? It's a real concern for the NFL. It's the biggest concern is the concussions, the fact that Ben Roethlisberger took himself out of the game. I thought it was fantastic, and so I thought about my family, that the doctors never caught it, and it ended up he did have a concussion, which leads me to believe, and this is part of the story in the movie also, how many guys have concussions you don't even know about? They walk off the field, you don't even know. It's going to be one of the biggest concerns the NFL has in the next 20 to 25 years, whether this league survives. And this movie is going to bring a lot of light into it, and I know I'm getting long-winded about this. I have a problem. I actually saw a standard NFL contract in 1983, okay? I saw what an NFL contract looked like from 1983, and it said that the league is not responsible for any head injuries or any injuries you incur. It's part of the process of playing the game. Yet players from that era and years before sued the league, John, and won. They won almost $1 billion, and the league now has in its collective bargain agreement that they'll take care of anyone who has concussion. If you play the full 7 years and you get in the pension program, you have any concussion problems throughout your life, the league will take care of it, which is a big step. But then how do you stop the concussions? The league, the players are bigger, and this movie is gonna really focus on that. The players are bigger and faster and better. It's a violent game, and what do? You try and redirect guys how to tackle. There's so many issues here that I'm talking about with this movie that's going to be talked about in this movie. It's going to open a lot of eyes.
Okay, and we're going to be watching it, and this will be probably sometime between Christmas and New Year's. You'll hear us review it and talk about it. All right, let's talk about it's Thursday night, so we can talk about the game that has not happened yet, Packers at the Lions. Lions are not mathematically out of it yet, but they're actually playing better. I think the Pack, and we talked about this in Pretender and Contender, I think they're a bipolar team. They can be great and then awful. That defense is Jekyll and Hyde. But here's what I see. I do see them bouncing back tonight because it's just the ebb and flow of the NFL. I see them bouncing back. I see the Lions having a little bit of a hangover game from winning last week. What do you think?
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. I think that the Pack do bounce back. And I mean, if you were to tell me in that Thanksgiving night game last week between the Bears and the Packers that the Packers would have a first and goal on the 9-yard line and Rodgers would miss four straight passes, I would have bet again. I said, there's no way. I mean, there's something missing with the Packers, but you're right. It's a bounce-back game, and I think there's enough there, and they're coaching, and they're more talented than the Lions. They can win, but I've said this throughout our entire doing this show. Would I be shocked if the Lions won? No. One thing I want to bring up, did you see how Brett Favre dressed for his retirement at Lambeau Field with a hoodie and a ski cap? He looked like he was auditioning for the Robin Big Motorcycle Show on MTV. I could not believe the way he dressed. And let me tell you the acrimony he has for that organization. When Al Michaels said, hey, Brett, you came up dressed for the occasion, he said, I don't do it for this organization. I'm doing it for the fans. The organization told him, can you dress accordingly? It's a suit and tie affair. We have a thing. He came in, YouTube it, fans. He came in a hoodie and a ski cap for his retirement dinner and his presentation at Lambeau Field. How classic is that?
Well, and, you know, I didn't think of it. To be honest with you, I thought it was because of the weather. It didn't even dawn on me that
every
he was
single Packer that was there, every single Packer that's in that Ring of Fame around Lambeau Field, including Bart Starr, the guys that had two strokes and a heart attack, was in a suit and tie, and it was raining also. So it's crazy that ego and look, he's eligible for the Hall of Fame, which will be announced, and we'll talk about that in a future show. I got some ideas on that. The Hall of Fame will be announced in about a month, and this is the first year he's on the ballot. He's going in, so he wants to do everything public relations wise, not to screw that up. But it's obvious he hates that organization.
That's interesting. Really interesting. Okay, I didn't pick up on that. Okay, let's go to some other games. Panthers at Saints. I think the Panthers prevail here. And to be honest, I mentioned this in the beginning of the show, I think the chances of them going undefeated are really good if you look at their remaining schedule.
Oh, I totally agree with you, and I think they win this game also. But the Saints, they're one of these teams that I'm shocked that they didn't score a touchdown last week against Houston, which means that, yep, that Sean Payne's totally lost that team. I think the Panthers win this game, but the Saints give them a game or even win. It's a divisional game. I hate picking divisional games because they're just so hard because these teams know each other so well.
All right, Eagles at Patriots. I got the Pats, obviously, bouncing back at home. No Gronk. It certainly could have been worse. And again, I'm not a big fan of the Eagles. They can be very bipolar as well. But I'm going with the Pats here. I just think you have Belichick and Brady. Who are you going with?
I think it's a closer game than people are going to expect. I like the Patriots. Danny Amendola and Dante Hightower are practicing as we speak. That's vital to have. He's got to have one weapon that he could think. Look, last week, no Gronk, no Amendola, no Julian Edelman, no Deion Lewis, and he drives them down the field for the tying field goal, Brady. It's unbelievable. I like the Patriots, but I think it might be a close game.
You know, you talk about that. That final drive in regulation to get them to regulation, to me, was absolutely phenomenal. 45 seconds, he got them down there. Obviously, Gostkowski is just a fabulous kicker, and he was kicking in Denver still. It was lousy weather. When I look at the Patriots and I look at Brady, they remind me of that scene in Monty Python's Holy Grail, the guy who's fighting the knight and he keeps getting his arms cut off. He goes, come on, keep coming at me, keep coming at me. He cuts off his leg, keep coming at me, keep coming at me. That's what the Patriots kind of remind me of. The only thing is that they're winning the fight. It's not like they're losing the fight. I don't think I've seen a team like this keep going. And really, I thought they should have won that game. I thought they were going to get blown out ahead of time. Is it something with the way Belichick picks players even for his practice squad? Is that part of it?
If you remember that scene from Monty Python's Holy Grail, when the guy got his legs and arms cut off, he screams at his attacker. He goes, come here, let me bite you in your ass. We're not done yet. You know, that's the same mentality the Patriots have. You know, you can cut their arms and legs off. The attention to detail in that organization from the people in the front office to the practice squad, it should be in a time capsule for future teams in every sport to look at. You look at a guy that had some big catches the week before when New England won, named Chris Parker, and they said, and they're all talking. I'll give you two examples. Chris Parker was a guy that had a great game the week before. He fumbles a punt. They cut him.
Yeah.
You remember Jonas Gray last year at 200 yards rushing against the Colts? He misses the practice, and Belichick cuts him. This is such a throwback to the 60s and 70s that you play by their rules. And he is a fair guy. He's not likable, Bill Belichick, from my sources tell me. But either was Vince Lombardi and Jimmy Johnson, believe it or not. But the respect that they had for them, for their coaches, was the reason why they're winners. And you're right. They just find a way to win with the people they have. The next man up, quote, when someone goes down, is never more prevalent than that in that whole organization.
Yeah, and I'm proud to be a Pats fan just because of that. So it feeds into everything I believe in as well. Let's talk about fan bias now, since I'm obviously a little bit biased here. I thought the Pats-Broncos game reached the height of just horrible ticky-tack refereeing that was strictly hometown calls. And I'm not taking anything away from the Broncos. I thought they played a good game. This was a great game with two good teams. But the calls on the Pats were numerous and certainly questionable. While there were clear violations on the Broncos, even on that TD where they actually went ahead, clear violations that were ignored. Am I being too biased here in this game?
I think we're looking at the officials right now more than ever. I heard Dean Blandino interviewed yesterday. He's the head of officiating, and he said he thinks the officials are having a great year. I disagree with him. He's going to protect his guys. But the same token, Pete Morelli and his crew that did that game were taken off the Monday night game and given another game. When you're reassigned from a Monday night game, that's sort of like a demotion. So the league's kind of admitting that crew, and Pete Morelli has had a great history in this league as an official. I think that once these officials got mic'd and they became part of the process of the NFL, two things happen. They like their stardom. They want to be on TV. They like the. I got to ask you this, John. If you're mic'd, do you become a member of SAG because of that? I mean, you could.
You know, if you think about it, if you have enough lines, in some respects, you'd probably be more SAG-AFTRA. Yeah, yeah, actually.
I wonder if the Screen Actors Guild looked at that for some of these guys, or even after. I've always thought about that. And the second thing is, the way the officials are calling this game, it's almost impossible for John Daly or your wife or your friends or my friends or wife to watch a game without a play happening. Let's say you're watching the Giants and the Jets this weekend, and Eli throws a pass for 30 yards to Odell Beckham Jr. The first thing you're thinking is, "Wow, not a great catch. Where's the flag?"
Yeah,
it's ingrained in your system right now to always look for a penalty flag because there's so many penalties are up 28% this year. It's huge,
and the
defensive holdings are up 60%. A defensive holding call actually helped the Raiders beat the Titans. It was a horrible call. It's one of the first times ever I can remember a call helping the Raiders. The Raiders had a 4th-and-18 real quick. And it was opposite side of the field. The NFL sends a letter to the Titans the next day to Mike Mularkey and the organization apologizing for the bad call and costing them the game. What does that do for an organization? Unless you're sending the entire team Super 10 models, hookers, to come and take care of them, and then, you know, a free night's week at the Empire Lodge at Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas, what does that do for you? You're right. We're looking at it because of social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. There's so many ways everyone's a critic right now. But to answer your question, I think this year the officiating has been the worst in the history of the NFL. The league is aware of it, though. This league is very good at protecting the image and the grid, John, as you know, and they're very aware of trying to keep the fans happy. And the one thing that can't keep the fans happy is if games are constantly being decided by the officiating. It killed the NBA for a while with the Tim Donaghy situation and the Fitch games. One thing fans won't put up with, if they figure that these games are just being decided because of lousy officiating, it could hurt the image of the game.
Could it also be, and I think I raised this with you last week, and I'll ask you again, do you think that the ticky-tack holding is to increase the passing game? To get more scoring, and they're just going to penalize the defense, hoping they're going to do it. And in essence, what they're doing, though, it's kind of backfiring because they're slowing the games down.
Exactly, and I have a huge problem with that. If you're already a league that is so popular, not only in the United States, but now picking up around the world and in Europe, you have to try and fit. It's almost a fix. What you're saying is a fix. They're trying to fix the games. So there's more scoring. I mean, let the games. I've seen games. Look, the Seattle 39-30 win over Pittsburgh last weekend was fantastic. Scoring everywhere. I've seen great 17-14 games. I really have this year. The game between the Green Bay and Minnesota a couple weeks ago wasn't a high scoring game, but it was hard hit. You and I grew up watching this league in the 70s and the 80s, and they had high scoring games. Remember the Eric Coryell years when San Diego's putting up 35-40 points a game. In the 90s, we had the greatest show on turf with Kurt Warner and Isaac Bruce and Torrey Holt, Marshall Faulk, and the Rams. The Patriots of the 2000s. They're always going to be great high-scoring teams no matter what. Why is the league trying to help this? I don't get that. And I hope it's a great point you make, John. I hope it's not true. I hope they're not trying to make a lot of scoring and make this into the Arena Football League.
But on the flip side, and again, my thing is that Gronk to me becomes like Shaq was, is that, you know, Shaq just turns in the middle of the lane and he knocks four or five people over. Oh, that's a charging call. And Shaq was always talking about that in the NBA. I think in some respects, the same thing happens to Gronk. I mean, some of the, you know, what they call him for push-offs, you know, maybe I've seen maybe one that I thought, okay, yeah, he did push off. But then there's other ones I'm like, he's just running down the field. He's just trying to make his cut. And he seems to get called all the time. It just seems to be he's a bigger boy. We're going to call him on him because he's just bigger. Am I getting two Patriots here?
No, but you're making great points. And in the league meetings in March, my sources tell me they're going to dedicate the whole league meetings in March. January's going to be January 12th and 13th. and the league meetings are going to be about the L.A. situation. But the one in March is going to be dedicated 80% to officiating. What is a catch that's pissing people off? What is exactly a catch? I've never understood it. Michael Crabtree, we saw Odell Beckham Jr. If you catch the ball and you're going out of bounds and you drop it, big deal. If you fumble out of bounds, you still get the yardage. So that's one thing. And the other thing I have to worry about that really is the league sent many letters this week. They even sent a letter to the Raiders saying they should have called the roughing the passer call on the guy that hit Derek Carr, hit him in the ribs, helmet the ribs. The two guys doing the game were Greg Gumbel and Trent Green, and they said that's an obvious roughing the passer. And then there was one in the Niner-Arizona game where Carson Palmer was sacked. The guy hit him in his torso, threw him to the ground, and they called roughing the passer. And I remember Chris Myers and Ronnie Barber go, that's the worst call we've seen all year. And it kept the Arizona drive going. It was a third down, and they ended up scoring a touchdown. The games this year, more than any, are decided too much by officiating, and there's not a consistency. The consistency is, John, which is really concerning, is there's more penalties on each crew. Each crew is throwing flags like it's crazy and stops the game. Last thing I'll say on this is crazy. Jeff Fisher and the competition committee wants to throw something out at the meetings that now coaches can challenge a penalty. So now you're only going to have two challenges a half on plays, or if it wasn't a catch, you know, did he fumble or whatever. Now you're really going to elongate the games because now every half, both coaches are going to challenge a penalty, which is going to take 5 minutes to look at and what have you, and then it's
easily
in discussion. So the league has to really address this in March and have these guys in seminars because the game is taking too long.
All right, we've been talking about bias. Let's talk about another bias in the NFL. You and I both heard Chris Collinsworth say that Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback of his era. I remember stopping and saying, really? I like Aaron Rodgers. He's a great QB, but not the best. And I know you had a similar take.
I totally disagree. I think he's a great quarterback. But in his era, I'll give you a guy that's in his era that started 3 years, well, actually was drafted the year before he was, or 2 years before he was. And I'll give you a guy, and we talked about him briefly. Ben Roethlisberger is a better quarterback than Aaron Rodgers. Okay? They're both great quarterbacks. But I go by wins, yardage.
Super Bowls.
Super Bowls. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger has been in three Super Bowls. He's won two of them. He's got the same amount of yardage and touchdowns and what have you. And what makes you – Drew Brees is a great quarterback in this era. Rodgers has got one Super Bowl win. Brees has one. There are people that will tell you, even though he doesn't have the stats, Eli Manning's a great quarterback. I know he struggles at times. It's all who you perceive. Phillip Rivers will go in the Hall of Fame. He's won one playoff game or two playoff games, but he's had a hell of a career. He never quit. So there's so many. We're actually in an era right now where you have a lot of great quarterbacks, and now you have a lot of young great quarterbacks coming up. I'm a fan of Blake Bortles. I'm a fan of Derek Carr. You know, I think Bridgewater's got a career, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago. A great quarterback class coming in 2016 in the NFL draft. But to answer your question, I think Aaron Rodgers just has this. People feel sorry for him because he had to sit behind Favre, and Favre was such a jerk to him all the time. And he comes in, he plays great. Everyone knows his whole thing. If you ever watch his NFL film stories, they show how he dropped in the draft. I mean, he's one of these guys like Brady Quinn that dropped to like 26 in the draft. He was a top 10 pick. So
yeah.
We're familiar with the Aaron Rodgers story, but there's other quarterbacks that are equally as good as him that are in his era or even better, in my opinion.
All right, let's talk about another bias. I call it the Johnny Manziel bias, or we've talked about the RG3 or the Tebow bias. I'm a big fan of John Gruden, but on Monday night, he kept pushing for Johnny Manziel to get into the game. I thought it was extremely odd, weird, and just kind of rubbed against me. I don't know if it was morality, ethically, or just good sportsmanship. Gruden seemed like such a homer for ESPN. In other words, he wanted more viewers because he felt more viewers would be watching this. And again, I love John Gruden. I just felt this was like, you're working for the media here. What was your thought on that when you heard that?
I think that what really troubles me, and you're a big media guy and you've written books on it, is we're so enamored with celebrity right now instead of talent. With the Kardashians, with some of the reality shows we watch and we're into, and it, that that it's now taken over in the sports world. Tebow's is another one. RG3 is a guy that's a celebrity. The Johnny Manziel is the biggest celebrity. Not only did John Gruden just beat it to death, but the pregame show with Chris Berman and the guys that Chris Carr talked about Johnny Manziel should be playing. The postgame show with Trent Dilfer and Ray Lewis, Steve Young were talking about he could have been in there. And they didn't talk about the game, which is actually a very good football game.
Yeah.
How about talk about this? And let me get your opinion. Austin Davis had 11% of the reps. He goes in there. He throws a tying touchdown pass. He drives him down the field for the potential game-winning field goal. It's not his fault that got blocked and went down for the Ravens' win. It's scary to me because what John Gruden realized is that Johnny Manziel lost his locker room. He lied to his coaches. He wanted his friends to lie about what he did. They said, "Do not go in a bar. You were in alcohol and drug rehab, and you're drinking. You were stopped with your girlfriend. You admitted you were drinking to a cop. You didn't give your breathalyzer. That was the first incident. Remember that happened a few months ago?
Yep.
And then this whole thing. And I think Pettin, who might be on the way out, is just a power play with his coach right now. But, again, to answer your question, I don't understand what the huge fascination is with these guys like Tim Tebow. I know what Tim Tebow thing was. That was religious. But Johnny Manziel is a polarizing figure. Okay, mm-hmm. He hasn't won anything in the NFL. At least when Tebow came up, for whatever reason, he guided that team. They were 1-5, and he guided the Broncos in 2011 to a 9-7 record, and he won a playoff game against Pittsburgh in dramatic fashion, and that was it for him. Manziel's done nothing yet. The media loves this guy, and I don't know why. He's not a good role model for kids, stuff like that. The media should be all over Cam Newton right now. Okay.
Yeah.
They said this is a guy who was just picked apart by the media. Assaulting, and he couldn't win games and throwing picks. He's having a great year. Yeah, he has his antics in the end zone. He's a celebrity. But what does he do after every touchdown? He gives a ball to a little kid. Okay? Why are we so enamored with the troubled youth, that's what I called Johnny Manziel, mm-hmm. Colin Kaepernick, somebody, RG3 and stuff like that? It doesn't make any sense. Did you know that there's a show called First Take on ESPN?
Yep.
And they open their show. Of all the things going on in the sports world, they opened their show the other morning with Johnny Manziel and should he be the starter the rest of the season. You got to tell me that's the number one thing you're going to talk about when you open your show. No, I think it's sad.
Well, it's true.
It's sad that we're so enamored with celebrity. And here's another thing too, John. They're a 2-9 team. They're 2-9. Okay, they're not going anywhere. It's not like they're in the playoff hunt and he. Can you imagine if they were 6-5 right now, John, in the playoff hunt, and he gets benched for Austin Davis? That's a story, okay? They're not going
Absolutely.
Anywhere, and it sickens me to even talk about this because, you know, I have a funny feeling that he'll bounce back and maybe the Cowboys will take him next year.
Well, and you're right on. You and I are both on the same page here because there's just a ton of bias and media bias in the NFL. And we talked about this just, you know, the Cowboys last week playing the Panthers. And the Cowboys were the favorites? Really? You know, clearly that's a bias of the media covering the Cowboys. I think the lack of media coverage covering the Panthers, and that's probably why Cam Newton doesn't get good coverage or doesn't get any coverage. But I just want to remind people, remember, these outlets are advertising machines. These media outlets are advertising machines. They need the audience to sell spots. They'll say whatever they can to keep you there, to keep you entertained. I got a great example of it. I worked for NECN, New England Cable News, as a news anchor in the Boston area. We were owned by Comcast at the time. It's now NBC. But in my contract, as a news anchor, I was barred from saying anything derogatory about any of the local professional sports teams on the air. It was in my contract, and anything I said could be a reason to fire me. And I was a news anchor, not even a sports anchor. That shows you the amount of money in sports. But like I say with all news, and I say this whether it's political, whether you're talking sports or not, you got to put on a mind filter to realize these folks are selling you something as well, and they are trying to make money. Just understand that, especially when you're watching these games.
So you think that ESPN had to talk about Johnny Manziel because they thought that no one's going to watch a Raven game?
Absolutely.
Against the Browns with Matt Schaub against Josh McCown as a starting quarterback. So that brought you in. You think that's good advertising?
I think that's part of it. I also think it's part of it that they understand their audience, and their audience is into reality TV. And if you're going to get a bigger audience, you're going to get the football fans no matter what. But if you can get the football fans talking about inside football and as a reality TV show or a soap opera, you're going to get even more fans. So I think they are instructed to do that. Yes, I do.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's my thought. Anyway, okay, let's go to some games. Cardinals at Rams. I got the Cards in this one, although I wouldn't be surprised to see the Rams bounce back. Still, I'm really big on the Cards bandwagon. How about you on this one?
Well, it's a shame. We're going to talk about the Rams in a bit. But, yes, I like the Arizona Cardinals. I even have Carson Palmer as one of my guys. There's three guys I got going for the MVP. Palmer, Cam Newton, and Tom Brady. And he's just having they're a very good football team. I like the Cardinals in this one. Have you seen a guy fall from grace faster than Nick Foles?
No,
they gave him a contract
absolutely.
Extension in the offseason, and they bench him for Case Keenum. He gets hurt, and then they bring him in. He has a horrible game against the Bengals. It's a bad situation there.
Yeah, just that whole trade for between Bradford and Foles is just a complete disaster. Hey, the reason I say I like the Rams is because there's a lot of talk about, and I think this is what you were talking about the Rams may actually fire Jeff Fisher. I think Jeff Fisher is actually a really good coach. Obviously, he's not had a great year this year. What are you hearing as far as Jeff Fisher being gone?
I think it's up to Jeff Fisher. I think he's got that kind of clout. I know Stan Kroenke, the owner of the Rams, loves the guy. They have a great defense, but they're not doing it. For whatever reason, they started out great. Todd Gurley had a bang up year. Just basically, he took over the lead in Rookie of the Year from Amari Cooper, and they just fell flat in their face. And part of it's because of the quarterbacking. And what Jeff Fisher's one of these guys that gets a team to be competitive and win games, but he's never gotten over the hump. Yeah, he had some great years in Tennessee with Eddie George and Steve McNair, but what has he done since then? So I think it's on Jeff Fisher. If he wants to leave, they'll let him leave. And that's how it's going to work out. Do I think he will leave? No.
Okay. A lot of coaches, obviously, on the hot seat. You and I thought there would be a few NFL coaches who would be up for the USC job, and then the Trojans go and hire from within. First of all, were you surprised at that? And secondly, who are the coaches you think are going to be gone soon?
Well, no, I'm not surprised because Clay Helton took the job. They had the same situation a couple years ago when Lane Kiffin was head coach. And they let him go, and they put a guy named Ed Orgeron in there. And he went like 8-1. He even beat Notre Dame. He lost to UCLA. He won a bowl game. And they let him go. And they brought Sarkisian in. And it really upset a lot of the boosters and the players. And Sarkisian ended up doing a fair job, and drinking his – probably hanging out with Johnny Manziel in the bar and drinking himself out of a job. Not surprised. Clay Helton's done a great job. I know Jack Del Rio was interested in that job. Sean Payton was interested in the USC job. Chip Kelly never really spoke to them, my sources told me. So, you know, that was – but I guarantee if he did, if they wanted contact, if he'd be interested. No, the coaches I have in the hot seat right now as far as the NFL coaches, obviously Mularkey's going to be out in Tennessee. They won't pull the interim tag off him. They won't pull the interim tag off of Dan Campbell, John, in Miami. I think Sean Payton's on the hot seat. I think Mike Pettine's on the hot seat. And for a crazy reason, believe it or not, Chuck Pagano doesn't get along with Jim Irsay, the owner of the Colts. Mm-hmm. And I think Chuck Pagano's done a great job this year. Another team riddled with injuries. He's getting Matt Hasselbeck. Matt Hasselbeck's your age, 60, and he's out there winning games. He's 4-0 as a starter. He could be on the hot seat. And the New York Giants, the hot seat being that, like I just said with Jeff Fisher, the Giants have enough respect for Tom Coughlin. The Giants don't make the playoffs this year. In a year where the NFC East is probably the worst it's been in years I can remember, I'll ask you that. If he doesn't make the playoffs this year, he'll resign. So you could, again, there's always five or six openings in the NFL, and we'll have the same thing in 2016.
Okay.
Going into
there are other Go ahead.
Well, I'm saying, no. I mean, 2016, there'll probably be five or six different coaches in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that's
Can I ask you a question? Can
sure.
I ask your opinion? There's a lot of talk and chatter that if Marvin Lewis, who's lost five straight first-round playoff games, and the Bengals will go to the playoffs, obviously, they could actually clinch it this weekend. If the Bengals go to the playoffs and lose in their first round, I'm hearing chatter he could be gone also. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised just for the simple reason that, you know, you're going to look at somebody and you're just going to say, you know what, you can get us there, but you can't get us to the playoffs. And really, getting there, we're kind of tired of just getting there. So, yeah, I agree with you. I could see it happening. I think it's kind of tough for Marvin Lewis. I think he's done a lot to clean up that locker room to make it a better team. I think it is a better team than the past teams that they've had before. I think it could happen. It's, you know, it's all about getting to the Super Bowl.
Right.
Hey, talk about other jobs out there for NFL coaches, because the LSU job we thought last week was going to be up, and then obviously, thankfully, the Bayou Bengals woke up and kept Les Miles. The Georgia gig is open, though, for someone with a big pedigree. Are you hearing anything on that maybe an NFL coach may go there?
Yeah, a little switch here. Well, I'm shocked Mark Richt was, what, 143 and 54 at Georgia? He's taking the University of Miami job, which is a
great move
job. And Kirby Smart's a defensive coordinator of the Alabama Crimson Tide. He's leading candidate to get the Georgia job, my sources tell me. And they're in negotiations right now. So you're going to see a little switcheroo. You're going to see a guy from Alabama go to Georgia, another SEC, and you're going to see that. Then you're going to see a guy from the SEC go into the ACC. You're going to see college coaches taking these other big jobs. Les Miles is staying. We just talked about Clay Helton. There'll probably be a couple of other openings. Keep this name in mind, too, that's interviewing for jobs. Remember Greg Schiano, who was the Rutgers coach?
Sure.
Schiano, he also had a brief fling in Tampa Bay. He's some of the leading candidates. He's in a lot of the mix to get a job, and I won't be shocked if he's gets a college job. One of these. There'll be another job that opens up. It always happens at the end of the year. But some of the big names, it's already being locked up.
Okay, so you don't see NFL coaches this year
who
are in the hot seat going to college just for the simple reason they're going to have to do it now.
The only thing I'm hearing that's interesting to keep an eye on is that Jim Irsay is enamored. Like, he's so in love with Nick Saban that if he let Chuck Pagano go, he would get everything to get him in Indianapolis, and that would be a little intriguing because Nick Saban says, I still have one other challenge in my life. I want to succeeded, and that means winning in the NFL. And if you have a chance to go to that team, and Andrew Luck is still young, he's only 26 years old, could be a little enticing for Nick Saban. Let's keep an eye on that for moving forward.
Interesting. Okay, let's get back to some more games. Seahawks at Vikings. I love this game. The Vikes, I think, are going to do enough to get by. I was surprised how bad they were against the Packers and yet better versus the Falcons. Seahawks, to me, they may be low energy after that really good game with the Steelers. So I'm going to go with the Vikes in this one.
The Vikes remind you of the 70s, John? Great running team, great defense. They're the Vikings of the 70s. And they're that Fran Tarkenton, Chuck Foreman, and a great defense. I like the Vikings also.
Okay. We talked about this already. Let's hit the game specifically. Bengals at Browns. Austin Davis is going to start for the Browns, as you were saying. I like this for the Browns and the whole morality of the team. I got the Bengals. I think they're back on track big for this one. So I'm going to go with the Bengals on this one. What are you thinking?
Oh, yeah. I think the Bengals win by two. Remember, right now you get the Bengals and the Broncos. They got a little bit of a window there, maybe catch New England. There's only a game behind them for the best record to get that home field advantage throughout the playoffs. So, you know, right now I'm dialed in on the Bengals.
Okay. We saw videos of the fans on Monday night taking their brown shirts off after that last disaster of the Ravens blocking the field goal, running it back for a touchdown to win the game. You know, still, I thought the Browns did a great job of fighting back to get into that position to tie the game. And I've said to Browns fans, you know, you're getting a little too chicken little here. You know, it's not as bad as you think. They actually did a really good job. And it's a tough season for them. How are you seeing that?
It is. They should have. Was that game – ask your wife, Terry, who's a huge Browns fan. Ask her if that game didn't mimic the Bronco game. Remember the Bronco game when Peyton Manning threw the interception to Marquise Mingle at the 48-yard line, and they couldn't go in and take advantage of it? When they intercepted Chubb at the 48-yard line and couldn't take advantage of it, then I said, oh, my God, that's crazy. The Broncos, the Browns have lost so many games. They should have beaten the Raiders. They should have beaten the Chargers. Should have, would have, could have a lot in the NFL. It's a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. The Browns are not that far away. Tell Terry and all the Browns Nation out there who just have a great rabid fan base, got three guys, you can four guys on defense you could build on. You got Paul Kruger, great defensive lineman, two great linebackers in Barkevius Mingo, John, and Carlos Dansby, and a good young secondary with Deshaun Gibson, Joe Hayden's a Pro Bowler. If they get Justin Gilbert going, there's pieces on the defense, and when you could build around the defense, and I'm quoting Ray Lewis, who agrees with me, then you could win. And, you know, look, what a disaster. You give Dwayne Bowe $5 million, he can't get on the field?
Yeah.
He's in uniform. Pro Bowler with the Chiefs. You got a great guy in Josh Gordon, who's probably out drinking with Johnny Manziel when he got in trouble. That's a great talent right there. You have a great – I'll tell you what, this Barnage kid, great young tight end. The Browns are not that far away. They're competitive in their games. Manziel had a great game against Pittsburgh. If you ask people around the league, my sources tell me, JT the Brick told me the Browns are one or two players away from being an 8-18. So don't get too down on yourself. And guess what? They're going to be picking in the top five anyway, so they'll get one of those players to help them next year.
Okay, there we go. Now, do they pick a quarterback in the draft?
Great question. I think if Manziel gets in there, I think the pressure is going to be – if Austin Davis goes out there and beats the Bengals, obviously. But if he gets torched, the pressure is going to be on Pettine to put Manziel. Manziel could get three or four wins. No. But if he stinks it up like he did last year at the end of the year, just playing horrible, yes. It's too good of a quarterback draft. Or they bring in one of these guys. I mean, Colin Kaepernick – I don't think Colin Kaepernick or RG3 are done in this league yet. I don't.
Okay, we'll see. It'll be an interesting spring. All right, Broncos at Chargers. I'm not totally sold on Brock yet, but I think he did some good things. And I think the Broncos, I think they're a little going to be beaten up after that win over the Pats. So in this one, I'm actually going to go with the Chargers in this one at home.
I disagree with you. Like I said earlier, the window opened. If you lose a game like this to the Chargers, that's 3-8 and out of it, and then you go two games behind the Broncos, the Patriots, who I think are going to beat the Eagles. We already picked them to beat the Eagles. Then you're not. Then you're not a legitimate playoff team. You have the good teams. We just picked the Bengals to beat the Browns. The good teams take care of. It's always called. You and I talk about this. Always called taking care of business this time of the year. I like the Broncos to win this game by two touchdowns.
All right, we are talking with our expert, Eric Schneider, author of a book on the Raiders and Raider Nation. He's also on the Power Hour on 1340 Fox Sports Radio in Vegas. You can follow me on Twitter and Facebook at John Daly Sports. To me, one of the really good games that I think will be interesting, the Colts at the Steelers. I really don't like the Colts outside, but I love the old man, like you said, my age, Hasselbeck, what he's done. I'm seeing the Steelers bounce back after that loss to the Seahawks, but I think this is a fairly close game.
So do I. I totally agree with you. I like the Steelers in this game. Again, they have to take care of business. They're fighting for that wild card. They pretty much know that the division is going to go to the Bengals, so I like the Steelers in this game.
Okay, Chiefs at the Raiders. I think the Chiefs are in for a little bit of a letdown, only for a simple reason. They've been winning, and they didn't look great against Buffalo. They did enough to get by. I still think the Chiefs are a good team and a resurgent team. I'm going to go with the Raiders in this game.
Yeah, I'm going to the game, covering for AOL.
This is
a real tough one for me because the Chiefs are the hottest team in football. They were 1-5 in their last five wins, John. They're averaging 29 points a game. And they're torching teams on defense. Yes, the Bills are up and down the field on them. I think Derek Carr could score. It's just I don't know if the Raiders have enough in their moxie. I mean, they've really played some bad football and not four quarters of football. I like the Raiders in this game, but again, the standard Eric Snyder line. Would anyone be shocked if the Chiefs won this game? No.
All right, so my question to you about this game is, could this be the last time these two teams actually meet twice during the regular season? Because now we're hearing reports that next week the NFL is going to decide what to do with L.A. What are you hearing?
Well, they moved that actually back to January 12th and 13th.
Oh, they did?
I missed that. They moved it back because Jim Irsay and Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the Ravens, said there's not 24 votes to get any of these teams through. The latest development, breaking news this morning, is Stan Kroenke of the Rams, who's basically said, I'm moving the team to – I can't believe he said this. I want to move the team to L.A., and I'm willing to partner up with either the Chargers or the Raiders. That's breaking news. Okay?
Wow.
Which means he's already – he's always got – if you're familiar with L.A., he's already bought the land where Hollywood Park is and already demolished it. That racetrack is not there, and there's actually bulldozers as we speak right there ready to break ground. So there's two projects, the Carson project with the Chargers and the Raiders,
wow.
and that was one option, and then there was going to be the Rams in Inglewood, and now Stan Kroenke said, I'll partner up with the team at no extra cost. Boy, I handicap this all the time, and for the longest time, I thought that the Raiders weren't moving because of the just a rabid fan base, and Mark Davis has such a great relationship with Libby Schaaf, the mayor of Oakland, and the local authorities. But the big thing is the relocation fees. I think the league is willing to pay the Raiders relocation fees because Mark Davis, believe it or not, he's the poorest owner of any owner in the league. He inherited his team from his dad, and that's it. That's his sole income is what the Raiders do. Where most of these owners are billionaires from other things, oil, Jerry Jones, and real estate with Daniel Snyder and Steve Bisciotti. Jeffrey Lurie's big in the entertainment industry, as you would know. He gave you your first job as Bozo the Clown's stand-in. Did a great job, too. The years didn't work. But anyways,
big feet, though.
There's a lot of things going on. Do you want to know what Eric Snyder's take is?
I do.
I bet you a dinner in Las Vegas that the league shelves this until 2017. Which is a disaster because San Diego fans know that they want out. They've already applied for relocation. Ram fans know that the Rams want out, and they're averaging 38,000 fans a game. Why do you think the NFL this year lifted the blackout rule? Because they knew there was going to be teams having 25,000, 30,000 fans a game. If you watch
Absolutely.
A Charger game or watch a Ram game, listeners out there, watch how the league shoots it. There's not a lot of fan shots, okay? It's a lot of what's going on in the field. When you watch a game,
it's true.
Telecast in New England or Green Bay, they're doing wide shots of the whole stadium and what have you. Getting back to the point, okay? I think there's not enough. I think, and there's another thing here too, John. You lived in L.A. I grew up in L.A. The L.A. fan base sucks. It's horrible. I'm sorry, L.A. people. Look how you're treating the Lakers right now. Lakers had 30 straight winning seasons, and now they're off 4,000 in attendance a game because they're horrible. Okay, what's going to happen with an L.A. team? And all these three teams we're talking about are not that good right now. The Raiders, the Rams, and the Chargers are mediocre at best, with the Chargers having a really down season right now. So there'll be a honeymoon period, one of those teams. So Jerry Jones says, yeah, there'll be a honeymoon period. But what's going to happen? We're concerned that the fan base might just go to the beach. And you've seen it in San Diego, so I'm long-winded.
Absolutely.
If I had a handicapper right now, believe it or not, okay, I could see the league shelving this until 2017, and every one of these teams are on a one-year lease. St. Louis with the Trans World America Dome, obviously Qualcomm with the Chargers and the Raiders and the EO.co Coliseum. So they'll just renew their leases and this and that, and we're going to go through the same crap and talk about this next year on the show.
Okay. Well, it gives us more to talk about. That's great. All right. Let's talk some other games. We've still got some other games to cover here. Texans at the Bills. I like this game a lot, too. I'm a big Texans fan now. I love their defense. I think they are doing the things that they shouldn't be doing. But I think they lose to Buffalo in Buffalo on this one.
Yeah, I agree with you because I'm going to go back to what you said about the Chiefs. The Chiefs are in for a letdown. I think Houston's playing way above their head. If you were to tell me, if I was to give you a bet that Houston would only give up 6 points to Cincinnati in a Monday night game in Cincinnati and then not give up a touchdown to Drew Brees, he scored a touchdown in the last 6 years, I would have said there's just no way it's going to happen. How about J.J. Watt, John? J.J.
Yeah.
Watt had 13 and a half sacks this year, and he started out real slow with only three in the first 5-6 games. He's got over 70 sacks. He's been in the league 5 years. He has a chance to break Strahan's record within 9 years of playing. And the defense is lights out. Clowney's back and playing great.
Yeah.
Close game. I like Buffalo. I think the loser of this game, I think if Buffalo loses, they're not going. They're out of the playoff race.
Yeah.
Houston could lose and be 6-6 and are still in a lousy division. So, but I like Buffalo in this game.
All right. Jets at the Giants, Battle of New York. I think this is going to be a good one. My head says Jets. My heart, of course, is saying Eli and the Giants bouncing back, despite looking so horrible. Because they look so horrible, I think, and typical of the NFL being schizophrenic, I think the Giants are going to actually have a good game, and I think they're going to come back. I think it's going to be a tough game. I think it's going to be a really, really head-knocking good game. So I'm going with the Giants. How about you?
Whenever you count the Giants out, they come back and have a great game. Like they did against the Patriots. Even though they lost, they outplayed the Patriots in that game. And last week, If I had to bet everything I have on the Giants beating the Redskins, I would have bet it, and it came out just flat and horrible. I watched that game along with every other game I try and watch. I was very disappointed in Eli. I like the fact that Odell Beckham Jr., John, has grown up. Sal Palantonio of ESPN said, another great catch you had. And he said, you know, Sal, I trust you as a journalist and you're great, but the two greatest catches I had came in losses. Talking about a great catch and we win the game. I love that.
Absolutely.
That shows me a winner right there. Not a Terrell Owens that talks about himself. That is great in Odell Beckham Jr. Ken, I like the Giants in this game, but if the Jets won, would you be shocked?
No, I wouldn't at all, because I like the Jets defense. I'm really a big fan of their coach and coaching
staff.
How
about Ryan Fitzpatrick? Quietly.
Yeah.
Four touchdowns last week. Huge.
Yeah, I mean, he's a journeyman, but he gets the job done, so I like it. But I do like what you said about Beckham. I really, really was impressed when I heard him say that. I thought, okay, yeah,
it was great.
You turned the corner.
You know, I love you, Sal, as a journalist. You're great. He's laughing. He goes, but you're talking about my two greatest catches came in losses. Well, talk to me after I do a great catch in a win. I love that.
Yeah, yeah, I do too. Okay,
that's Monday night. That's character.
I agree. And it's a kid growing up. So I think that's really cool. Monday night, Cowboys at the Redskins. I know we both think the Cowboys are pretenders, but technically they're still mathematically in it. So I wouldn't be surprised if they win over the Redskins on Monday night, since the Redskins, again, we're talking letdowns after they beat the Giants. Really, the Giants stunk in that game, and the Redskins, to me, barely won that game, even though the Giants stunk. So I'm actually going to go with the Cowboys in this one. I don't know why, but anyway, who are you picking?
I love the fact you're going underdog. I like the Redskins in this game. Again, if the Redskins lose this game and the Giants lose to the Jets, could you believe that? And I think the Eagles are going to lose to the – could you believe the Cowboys could be 4-8 and one game out? And it's the reason why Jerry Jones, the biggest egotist in the league, they haven't put Tony Romo on the IR yet, because he's only out five or 6 weeks, and he's looking to see what happens in the next couple of weeks. If they're one game out or two games out, this could be the first time a 6-10 team goes to the playoffs. I like the Redskins in this game. And I'll tell you what, you're going to bring up another couple of games here that we're going to talk about. And I got a couple other guys in the hot seat as I'm watching how this is going on with the games we're going to pick. I think Jay Gruden, if he blows this, because they're actually playing good football, he could be in the hot seat too.
Interesting. Okay. Falcons and Buccaneers. Falcons, to me, are the biggest pretenders with the best talent. To me, it's all about the fact they have no defense. I'm beginning to like Jameis. I'm really beginning to like to see the things that he does. I like what the Bucs are doing. So I'm going to go with the Bucs at home.
Yeah. Matt Ryan's taking a huge dump also. It's horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible in the game 2 weeks ago against the Colts, throwing picks in the red zone and then threw a critical pick. You know, I think he's another guy I'm concerned about. I handicapped the Rookie of the Year award. I had Amari Cooper during the first – we're in week 13. Mm-hmm. During the first 6 weeks winning the Rookie of the Year. And then weeks 6 through 10, I had Todd Gurley winning Rookie of the Year. And now I have Jameis Winston. Even though they lost last week to the Colts, he's having a great year, and you can see a lot of promise in this guy. I like Jameis and the Bucs also.
Okay, 49ers at the Bears. I got the Bears in this one. I think John Fox has done a great job of rejuvenating the team. I think he's a great regular season coach. Obviously, he hasn't done much in the playoffs, even though he's been to some Super Bowls. Ironically, the Bears, they're still also in contention for a playoff spot. Who do you got in this one?
I think John Fox is one of the best coaches in this league, not named Bill Belichick. Mm-hmm. What he did with Tebow, taking a team that's 1-5 with Kyle Orton and is changing the offense in midstream, getting to the playoffs, and, of course, he wins 12, 13, and 12 games with the Broncos and gets canned. Does that sound like Jim Harbaugh with the 49ers? I mean, this is actually a team of a coach that got canned. And then the coach that took over for a guy who got canned. And I think Jim Tom Sula's on the hot seat. I really do. He was told when he took this job, look, Jim Harbaugh built you a franchise here. We went 8-8 last year. They just – there's something missing with the 49ers. I know they've had attrition and with guys retiring and injuries. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got injuries. I wouldn't be shocked that's another guy on the hot seat. I like the Bears big in this game. Although you got to admit, Blaine Gabbert's not playing bad football for the 49ers.
Yeah. Yeah, he was a good college quarterback. Really didn't get that much of a chance. But, yeah, I agree with you. And I still think the Bears, I like what Fox has done with this. And Cutler's actually grown up a bit himself.
Right.
Yeah, okay, cool. Jaguars at the Titans. I think the Jags kind of shot themselves in the foot last week. I thought they could actually have done something. But both teams, I think, are done here. I'm going to take the Titans at home.
Me too. I like what I saw at Mariota against the Raiders, and that team doesn't have a lot of talent, and Mariota's making the most as a rookie. He's having quietly a good year on a very, very – that probably is the most talentless team in the National Football League. Jaguars, Gus Bradley's on the hot seat. I know he's an uppity guy. He's the most likable coach in the NFL, according to my sources.
Yep.
The nicest guy, always grants interviews, always joking. That loss against the Chargers, the fact they had the ball 9 times in a red zone and came up field goals, and how many times is Blake Bortles going to throw the ball over the line of scrimmage, and he passed the line of scrimmage and he got flagged on it? Just horrible clock management. And,
yeah.
And I'm not seeing any progressions with the Jaguars, who have talent on their team, so... I like the Titans in this one. Again, Gus Bradley could be out at the end of the season.
Okay, Ravens at Dolphins, another not worth watching game. I got the Dolphins in this one, but I think they're done as well.
I got North Carolina State versus Louisville. I think North Carolina State's on at the same time. This is not. You got to give. I know that you know John Harbaugh, you know, and he what he's done with this team is got to be Coach of the Year. They're in every single game. No team in the history of the NFL has gone through 12 weeks and every game's decided by 8 points or less. They're in every game. Again, injuries. Look at that team. Morsett's out.
Yeah.
Steve Smith's out. Bernard Perryman's out. You lose Joe Flacco. You lose Terrell Suggs in the beginning of the year. You lose Chris McCaffrey. They've lost 9 starters and they're in every game. Okay?
Yeah.
I'll tell you. Don't be shocked if the Ravens beat them because they have more heart. Okay?
Okay. Interesting. Talking about the Ravens against the Browns last week. When Matt Schaub played last week, he was only the second quarterback ever to play under John Harbaugh with the Ravens. So my question to you is, a lot of reports that Flacco may not be ready for the season next year. Do the Ravens go into the draft looking for a new QB since it is such a good draft?
No. What the Ravens do is they bring in an RG3 or a Colin Kaepernick and say, you're the guy, because what I'm hearing is that Joe Flacco might not be available to week 8, which means, are you going to tell it to your fans and say, hey, we got to go on with the Matt Schaub? Or, you know, isn't it amazing that Matt Schaub has thrown a pick 6 in his last 7 games?
I know, yeah.
He played one game with the Raiders last year. He had 10 passes, and one was a pick 6 against the Rams, I mean, in the game that he played. So, but they still won the game. Matt Schaub's not your answer. So and Joe Flacco's only, believe it or not, he's only 29 years old, signed a huge contract, and he's a winner. So you're not going for a quarterback in the draft, but there'll be one of these guys that's a free agent and Nick Foles is going to be out there too. He has a 1-year option. So in other words, they have a chance to get out of that the Rams have a chance to get out of that under him. So there'll be other guys out there where Matt Schaub's not the option.
Okay, great. Let's talk fantasy again. We don't know what's going on as far as fantasy goes with the New York State Supreme Court, and again, we'll keep you apprised on that. But you're still going to be going with your fantasy picks. So let me go with your fantasy picks. Who do you got in QB this week?
Andy Dalton.
Nice.
Andy Dalton or Tom Brady, if you could take him. I think they're going up against 2 horrible defenses in the Browns and the Eagles, and they're going to throw the ball, especially the Patriots, because they really don't have any running game. I mean, LeGarrette Blount hasn't really picked up for Deion Lewis being out. So either one of those two guys.
Okay, running back.
You know what? Don't laugh at this one, but I really like Adrian Peterson. I think Adrian Peterson, the Seahawks did nothing against the Seahawks defense is very disappointing to me this year. Did nothing against the Steelers. It was all Russell Wilson throwing 5 touchdowns. So I like Adrian Peterson. I'm going to go with him. It's at 2-2. Two of the last 3 weeks, he's got the fantasy title. He had 200 against the Raiders. He had 158 last week. Love this guy.
Yeah, especially towards the end of the season, too, as you're supposed to be wearing down. Wide receiver.
I think Antonio Brown's going to bounce back. I really do. I think Antonio Brown is going to the Colts defense isn't that great. And for some reason, I don't know why Ben didn't go to him. He didn't have to because Marcus Wheaton had a great game for the Steelers last week, but I like him. I also like Amari Cooper of the Raiders.
Cool. Now, why is that?
He's matched up against Eric Berry. Eric Berry for the Chiefs is the one guy that's susceptible, And I think Amari Cooper is due for that breakout game. I saw it last week against the Titans. The one thing that gets Amari Cooper down, if he drops a pass in the first quarter, he sulks. You have to work on that. But if he gets this guy, it's almost like a basketball player that's on a great shooting streak. Mm-hmm. They just can't miss a shot the entire game. And there's some games they miss their first three shots. You can't get them going. Same thing with Amari Cooper. I have a gut feeling on this one. I'm not the only one who thinks that, too. Look at some of the other fantasy guys around that the pundits that are talking about fantasy this week.
Okay, tight end.
Tyler Eifert.
Is there anybody else you go with besides Tyler Eifert?
Yeah, Crockett Gilmore, Baltimore Ravens. Okay? I don't like Gates against Denver's defense. I mean, you're talking about the best tight end. Jimmy Graham's injured. Eifert leads the league in touchdowns for a tight end, playing a bad Browns defense. Gilmore's another guy. I mean, the Dolphins defense isn't that great either. You know, it's funny, we haven't talked about Ndamukong Suh that much this year, have we?
No, we really haven't.
In the league. Right.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk defense. Who are you picking defense and special teams?
Cincinnati. I'm all on Cincinnati this week. I mean, I like Austin Davis, what he did against the Ravens, but I just think there's too much turmoil in that Browns org. I mean, I talked about the Browns earlier in the show, but I think they're one or two players away. This year is tumultuous for that team. So I think you got to go with Cincinnati.
Okay, kicker.
Who do you think?
Gostkowski.
Maybe one of the best kickers in the history of the league, Steven Gostkowski.
Yeah.
Because they're going to put points up, and he'll have six extra points against this team. Field goals. So.
Okay. And if there is anybody doing a last man standing, who are you going with last man standing?
Cincinnati.
Okay.
Cool. Here's the thing. Let's look at last man standing as far as you got to let's go another angle if you can, John. Let's say that people have taken Cincinnati already, and they probably have, and they've taken the Patriots and this and that. I would go with the Buccaneers or the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Bears are going to beat the 49ers. Okay, I'll go with the Bears. Take away Cincinnati listeners, and I would go with the Bears because I'm assuming this getting into this last part of this season that people have already taken the Cincinnati's and the New England's and the Carolinas, and you're going towards the other tier of teams that have to get you when you think they can win. So I'll go with the Bears.
All right, cool. Let's wrap it up here. What are you going to be honing in on this weekend while you're sitting there watching Red Zone and every other game that you have with 200 different televisions in your man?
Well, I'll be in Oakland covering the games, but I'll be in the club suite, so I'll focus on the early morning games. I think the league has gotten a lot of flack. We talked about it so with the officiating, so I'll be keeping an eye on that to see if obviously I'll be at the game, so I'll be looking at the officiating at the Raider game and hoping that this doesn't come. It's just coming down to the fact that all these games are being decided by officiating. And what I'll get you for next week's show is I'll interview a couple of people about the pulse of the Raiders in Oakland. Okay?
Cool.
I'm going to talk to Mark Dano. Mark Dano is in charge of an organization called Stay in Oakland. I actually talked to him when I was up there with the Jets game earlier in the season, and I want to see what that is. So I'll at least give you a progress report from the local people in Oakland about what's going on and what's things we don't know about behind the scenes that could be a plan to keep them in Oakland or if they're just resigned to the fact that they're leaving.
Cool. Fascinating. We'll be looking forward to it. Also, so when you're on the road covering the Raiders, that's going to be a late afternoon game or a late afternoon game for the East Coast. In the mornings, what do you do to watch the other games?
I have a pass to the club suites, and the club suites has about, they have two or three TV sets in there focused on games. One will be on the Red Zone. Now, if I could talk to JT the Brick or talk to a couple of people and get that interview, I obviously won't. But then again, I have my beautiful wife that tapes the Red Zone channel for me for the morning games. And the afternoon is only two or three games, and Oakland does a great job when you're there. They have a great job in the club suites while you're watching the game. The other games are on. I'll be focused on the Raider game, but I'll be in tune with everything going on in the National Football League on Sunday. But I'm really hoping on getting a couple of interviews in and really keeping what the pulse is because the fan base up there is so rabid and loves it. Of the three teams that are jockeying to move to L.A., the Raiders have the most rabid fan base, and it's not even close compared with St. Louis and San Diego. It's not even a topic of discussion. The Raiders belong in Oakland, so we'll look at that angle. We'll get JT the Brick, talk to him. I'll talk to Bill Romanowski at Raiderville. So I'll be up there and doing some work and and get in the pulse of the Raider Nation and keep an eye on the other, on the games, because right now, John, as you know, this is it. We're in the home stretch. And a lot, I'll give you two games. The Raiders, whoever loses the Raider, if the Raiders lose against Kansas City, they're out. If the Bills lose against the Texans, they're out. I don't care what their records are, if they're still. If the Giants lose to the Jets and the Redskins win, I think the Giants are going to be out. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think I'm working on that. Look at the NFC East. Look at the way it plays out this week. If you have some games where Philly plays New England, a loss. Giants play the Jets. If they lose, bad. Then you got the Redskins and the Cowboys, and I still think there's a scenario that the Cowboys, if they win that game, and we talk about the other two teams,
yeah.
I'm looking at the scenarios too of the bad divisions, the AFC South and the NFC East are really bad divisions in my opinion. Although Houston and the Colts are 6-5, and Houston could scare you in the playoffs because of that defense. That being said, I think a lot will be said about the playoff picture after this week and next week when we start handicapping those games. Keep this in mind also, I'm long-winded. New England, Carolina, and Cincinnati can clinch playoff berths with wins this weekend.
Yeah, and after this week, we still got 25% left. So even though we're deep into the season, there's still a lot of scenarios that could play out. You could see somebody run the table and unexpectedly get into the playoffs too. So
last thing I want to bring up with you, and I'm involved in a few last man standings in local establishments in Las Vegas and casinos throughout the nation. 86% of all last man standings are done. That's how weird this year has been. New Orleans and Baltimore in week two killed everyone. Everyone had Baltimore beating the Raiders because the Raiders are horrible, and everyone had the Saints in their home opener beating the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That wiped out half the left. That wiped out half the last man standings throughout the United States in last man standing contests. John, don't give you a mulligan. Most don't. You know, you lose, you're out, especially in the casinos and this and that. So it's been such an interesting year with parity and that and the officiating and
the injuries.
And the injuries, and you know, last year we were so focused on domestic violence and the Adrian Peterson and Ray Rice story, but the season seemed to go pretty good, and the two best teams got in the Super Bowl with Seattle and New England. This year, it's a whole. I could see any of the top teams, even Carolina, losing in the playoffs. There's no one couldn't tell me that if Carolina hosted Arizona in the championship game, that if Arizona won, they'd be shocked. Or the three teams I just mentioned, Cincinnati, Denver, New England. Any of those teams could go to the Super Bowl, and any one of those guys could win on the road and beat you at your stadium, and we wouldn't be shocked. I mean, could you imagine if it was a Cincinnati-Arizona Super Bowl?
Sure.
You got Carson Palmer going up against the Bengals in the Super Bowl. Wow.
Yeah. All right, on that note, we've been talking with our expert, Eric Schneider. He's the author of a book on the Raiders and Raider Nation. He's also on the Power Hour at 1340 Fox Sports Radio in Las Vegas. Wojcik, thanks. Another great week.
Thank you, John.
All right, buddy boy. We'll talk to you next week. And you can also follow all my coverage on Twitter and Facebook on John Daly Sports. Folks, thanks for following and tuning in. We'll catch you next week. Enjoy the games.
For more on John Daly, including his blog postings and instructional videos, go to informnotinflamed.com.